There's something I think is almost hypnotizing about looking at the night sky, the dark sky, especially when you know about the special astronomy events that are coming up, and you can and really sort of anticipate them. And it's really a lot of fun. Larry Mueller here. Thanks again for joining us on the Ideas Network. And I like to look up there and see what's going on in the sky right now and whether or not there's a special event. And another guy who likes to do that is Paul Kinzer, and he's going to help us talk about the sky and talk about his book. His book, his second edition of his book, Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. It's published by Cambridge Press, Cambridge University Press, and just out. I've got a copy right in my hand, as a matter of fact, and I'm glad to have it. You may have a question for him about what's going on in the sky or what you've seen in the sky, and I hope you'll join in. And maybe you'll have questions about the book. Maybe you'll have questions about scopes or binoculars. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I think we're going to talk about holiday gifts as well, because we're kind of getting into that time of the year. So that'll be something you may have a question about that, too. Join in. And Paul, welcome back. It's always great to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I will say right now, unlike Larry, I don't get up at 5:30 in the morning. I am much more of a nighttime person than a morning person.
Well, I tell you what, yesterday morning, there was not a cloud in the sky. And I got out and started running sort of east and looked up, and the two brightest things in the sky, okay, there's two planets. I knew the one was, I'm pretty sure one was Venus. I got out my stargazing app and pointed it up there, and the other was Jupiter.
Yep. And the kind of a neat thing about that is just a few months ago, on June 30th, they were both up in the evening sky, and in fact, they were right next to each other. My son and I were able to see them, both of them, at the same time in one view of through a telescope. It was very cool.
It was really cool to watch this morning. And then there's been some more news out recently on Jupiter, that the shrinking of the there's something called the Great Red Spot.
That's right. The Great Red Spot is a storm on Jupiter. It was first spotted hundreds of years ago. It was spotted as soon as we had telescopes that were good enough to actually see it. So we don't know how long it's been there. And it has been shrinking, and it's been shrinking more quickly lately. Also, it can change color. It's called the Great Red Spot, but it's more of a tan color now. So you have to have a really good telescope and really sharp skies where everything's very steady to even see it. It's still big. It's bigger than the planet Earth, but it is.
The storm itself is bigger than the planet Earth.
Bigger than the planet Earth, or at least wider across. But yeah, the Earth would easily fit inside it.
Wow. And it's a storm.
It is a storm. I'm not a professional scientist, but what my reading has told me is that what you're doing when you see it is you're looking down further into the clouds of Jupiter. When we see Jupiter, what we see is actually cloud tops. We don't see the surface. In fact, there isn't really a surface of Jupiter. It's mostly hydrogen, and it goes from gaseous state. And then there's a lot of trace things there, too, that give it its color. And then finally, it's so compressed, because it's a massive planet, that it's so compressed near the middle that the hydrogen becomes a kind of metal.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is, that's fascinating.
That really, really is. Thanks very much for that explanation. I really appreciate it. And callers online already, by the way, you could join in. We can still get you on pretty quickly at 800-642-1234. I want to talk about Paul's book, but let's take Vicki in Waukegan, Illinois, next, who has a question. Vicki, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a Bushnell telescope, and it's all put together, except for I'm missing one piece down by the eyepiece where you look in.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if there's some place anybody could suggest where I could, take it to get it repaired or find a piece.
Well, typically on an astronomical telescope, the eyepiece is not, it's not attached. You can exchange eyepieces, so it's easy enough to simply purchase an eyepiece. You can go online. The issue with that is I don't see your telescope in front of me, and eyepiece diameters, the actual size of the metal that slides into the scope, they can come in three different sizes. So you would need to know which size you need, and you can just use a ruler. One size is just under an inch. The next size up is an inch and a quarter, and then there's 2 inches. If it's a Bushnell, they're usually less expensive telescopes, so it's probably going to be either that 0.965 inches or the 1 1/4. 1 1/4 is better because good eyepieces for 1 1/4 are easy to find. But you don't really need to repair the scope. You just need to get some eyepieces for it.
Oh, because it seems loose, and it seems like we are unable to focus on anything.
Well, I guess I'd need to see it before I could really answer your question. But if something's loose, it could be more that it's missing a screw rather than missing a part. But I might be wrong.
Yeah. You know, one place to go in Waukegan, Illinois, there may or may not be a stargazing club.
Right, yes. Most places in the country, if you just do a search of your area and astronomy club, you may well find a local group that could help you. If there's a university or college nearby, their physics department, somebody there probably has a telescope, and you could take it to them, or they would know where you could go to get it worked on.
Yeah.
It's fairly simple stuff. There are many standard sizes, so it should be pretty doable.
And yeah, and Astronomy Club, my experience with people in Astronomy Club, well, you're a member of Astronomy, are really helpful, and they enjoy working with people. So
right, and most of us reaching out to folks to share the hobby and to share the joy of the night sky. That's a big part of why we join a club.
Yeah, absolutely. So good luck, Vicki, and thanks very much for calling. I would find an astronomy, see if there's an astronomy club in your area. I bet there is. Waukegan, big enough, for sure. Mm-hmm. Give it a shot. Erica, and you might find out that you can fix it for nothing or almost nothing.
Right, yep.
Erica in Spring Green, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, I was just wondering, any recommendations to get my 5-year-old son into stargazing?
Well, number one, go outside.
Mm-hmm.
Go outside and look up. I was just in Monroe, Wisconsin, the day before yesterday doing a planetarium presentation, and then we went outside when it got dark, and especially at this time of year, it gets dark early enough, even a 5-year-old can go out. I would say a telescope is a great idea, but it isn't always the first idea. Going outside, talking about what it is that you're looking up at and seeing. And if you don't know much about it, there are some great books for kids. A book that I recommend for absolutely everyone is a book called The Stars, A New Way to See Them. It's by H.A. Rey. He wrote all the Curious George books. So that's kind of a connection right there if the child knows who Curious George is. It's a really great book for anybody to learn about the constellations, and kids love the constellations. They love the stories of the constellations. You know, right now, if you look almost straight up in the evening, there's the constellation Hercules, Orion the Hunter, which is one of the easiest constellations to see. He will be rising earlier and earlier, and by Christmas he's out right at supper time. So that's another great one. I would say the whole sky is easiest with younger kids, and then you can ease into the telescopes.
Mm-hmm.
Binoculars are another one. Pretty easy to even a 5-year-old can use binoculars. You just hold them up to your eyes and you look up. And if you're looking in certain parts of the sky, no matter what, you're going to see lots and lots of stars that you can't see with your eyes.
Very cool. Thank you, Erica, very much for calling. Appreciate it. Dee Dee in Lake County, Illinois, we turn to you next. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, guys. Anyway, I was calling about your last other listener that called about her telescope. I belong to the Lake County Astronomical Society. We have a website, and we're having a meeting tomorrow night. We also have outreach and mentors. She wanted to bring her telescope. People answer all her questions. I mean, they're just awesome.
Oh, that's wonderful. So it's Lake. What's the name of your group again?
The Lake County Astronomical Society, and their website is lcas-astronomy.org.
lcas-astronomy.org.
Right. And there's, she's lucky. There's a meeting tomorrow. We have,
perfect.
And people answer questions. We got mentors. They helped my son build a telescope out of copier machine parts.
Yeah.
It's really a great group.
Oh, it sounds wonderful, Dee Dee. We will try to, if you want to shoot a note to my Facebook page.
I'm not on Facebook, and I'm driving anyway.
Oh, you're driving anyway. Okay, well, we'll try to get it posted. We'll try to get it posted. Give it to me once more.
LCAS stands for Lake County Astronomical Society, lcas-astronomy.org.
Okay, -astronomy.org.
Yeah, and there's a meeting tomorrow at 7:30 at the Volo Bog.
All right, I'll tell you what, we'll have... Rebecca Haas, our on-air producer today, is going to post that up on our Facebook page so that if people in your area are interested, there it'll be. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. That was perfect. It happens a lot on this program.
Yeah.
It does happen a lot. Mark in New London. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Say, last night we were out for a walk around 9:30, and we live outside out of New London, and... we saw several flashes going on in the north and northwestern sky, actually going right through the Big Dipper. And they were brighter than a airplane strobe. And this lasted for maybe about 5 or 6 minutes. And the flashes were moving around the sky. We saw this one other time when we were out stargazing, and I thought it was some type of a unique meteor shower that instead of streaks, you would see quick flashes, and it would flash like 2 or 3 times, and then it would go away.
And
happening last night?
Are they streaks? Are they a tiny little dot?
They're blips.
They're not streaks. They're dots and
blips.
They're, you know, if you've ever seen the space station cross, you know, going across the sky, they were about as bright as the space station. And at first, I thought that's what it was because we get notified when it's going over and we watch it. But it was going in the wrong direction, and it was intermittent, and then there was no distinct flight pattern.
That's well, there are a lot of different things that can be up in the sky. It could be a different satellite from the space station, and if it was intermittently flashing and on flashing, it could be that it was spinning, and that the sun would hit it, and that at another angle it wouldn't hit it.
So that's one possibility. We'll think about that, and Paul Kinzer may have another idea or two. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with Paul. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at the stars right now with Paul Kinzer. Paul is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. The second edition of the book is just out from Cambridge University Press. It's a wonderful book, and we'll want to talk with him about it. I want to give Jeff and Baraboo a chance to join us, and then we'll talk some more about the book. Jeff, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning, and boy, can I recommend Paul's book. It is absolutely amazing. It's well worth the dollars. I lead the state 4-H astronomy project, and if there's nothing better than to get your kids started on this early, astronomy project has a real strong presence nationwide in 4-H. Go to your local agent and talk about it. We've got... real-life professional telescopes you can use online, the Skynet telescopes that are based all over the world are really cool, and you get to use them. The main reason I called is, I'm sure Paul gets this too, the question you get asked is, first of all, what's the best telescope to buy? And, of course, the correct answer is the one you'll actually use. Often you'll get people who will buy their kid an expensive, beautiful telescope, but it takes a half hour to set it up before you can use it, and they'll go out twice, and then it'll sit and gather dust. So I usually tell people that the best telescope is probably, for a first telescope anyway, a binocular.
Yes.
And I'll give you one cute little trick for using it that I've never seen anybody else do. I saw it in a 1950s Sky and Telescope magazine. easiest. Binocular is really nice, but because you're hand holding it, it jumps all over the place. So it's beautiful, deep view of the sky, but it's hard to hold it steady. Cleverest thing I've ever seen is you have to spend about $5. You buy a 2-foot-long length of steel rebar, and you pound it halfway into the ground, so 1 foot is sticking up. I know this is really weird, right? Buy a 10-foot length of half-inch PVC pipe, costs you $1.50, slide it over the end of the rebar. On the other end, you attach about an 18-inch piece of string and tie your binocular to it. And now you find a nice, comfy chaise lounge, sit down, pull the binocular down, and the PVC pipe holds all the light of your binocular, and it is rock steady, and you can sit there for hours, and your fingers don't get tired, and it's real easy to use. Cleverest thing I ever saw.
Jeff, thank you.
Yeah, and you mentioned Sky and Telescope. I didn't get it in the 1950s. I wasn't here yet, but they have a monthly, or usually a monthly, column on people making their own stuff, and they often have advice on various things just like that. And of course, most even halfway decent or even inexpensive binoculars usually have a tripod mounting hole, and you can get an adapter for, again, about $5, so that you can put your binoculars on just an inexpensive camera tripod, which a lot of people already have.
Yeah, which is exactly right. Jeff, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. And that 4-H astronomy program is a great program.
It is a great program. 4-H in general, I'm going to push it. My son was just elected vice president of our club. So, the 4-H is, and the thing is, 4-H is one of those things. Each club is a bit different, and some might have a stronger astronomy program than others. But the resources are there, and they're all over the state. Anywhere you live, you can find 4-H.
Your book was a wonderful Stargazing Basic. The first edition was wonderful. The second edition, and by the way, the subtitle, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, I think it's a wonderful beginner's guide to astronomy, but it includes everything you need to get started, but it has updates as well.
Yeah, I updated the images. The first edition came out in 2008, and it seemed to be time. There's new equipment out there. Things that maybe were really expensive when the first book came out are less expensive now. This time, Cambridge took some of my pictures and put them in there in color to show you some of the things that you can do pretty much most of it with photography. The human eye at night doesn't see color very well, but that's one of the huge changes is photography in astronomy. Your smartphone, there's a photo in there of somebody just holding a smartphone up to a telescope now and taking beautiful pictures of the moon. So, updates. Computer-guided scopes have come down in price. I'm still not sure myself if I think that's the best thing for a beginner, but other people would disagree with me. Updates on where are the planets going to be in the sky. Yeah, it's got a lot of new stuff.
Lots of new things, and it's a wonderful book for the beginner, but I think no matter kind of where you are, you're going to learn from it.
Right. And when I wrote it, about half of the book is about choosing equipment, because those are the questions we get. And I agree with that caller who said the best first binocular or first telescope is probably binoculars. And I even say, if you aren't sure you're going to get into this yet, again, just go outside, look, see if this is something that you are going to stick with. And it can be the least and the most expensive of hobbies. You can have a wonderful time for no money at all, or you could spend millions.
Literally. Dave in Menominee Falls has a question for us, so let's go there. Hi, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking the call. I have experienced a phenomenon which I can't explain. I enjoy going out and looking at the stars, even though I'm in Menominee Falls and we have a bit of light pollution. There are times when we have a dark enough sky that you can enjoy the spectacular views, the blood-red full moon that we had recently. Fortunately, it wasn't cloudy that day. I experienced this a couple
probably 4 or 5 days ago. I was out probably about 11 o'clock at night, and I saw a flash of light in the sky. It's one of those things out of the corner of your eye you catch. And I looked up, didn't see anything, but I kept looking up and just kind of like opening my gaze to the entire field, and I saw it again, flash.
And
okay, I watched it again about a minute later, flash. It didn't move in space. It was stationary. Am I seeing a stationary satellite catching the sunlight as it spins, or is it ET phoning home?
Huh. Well, I'm going to guess it's not the latter. And the thing about stationary satellites is they're 20,000 miles plus up in space, so they're never bright. You're going to have to know exactly what you're looking for to see those. I really don't know what it was. If it was not moving in the sky, the only thing I know of that doesn't move in the sky is a helicopter. Sometimes if it's moving very, very slowly, it could be a weather balloon. Although at 11 o'clock at night, I don't see how it could be catching the sunlight. The Earth would have turned too far for that to happen. So I'm going to say you have stumped me. I don't know if it's flashing. I mean, if it's, especially if it's something you're seeing in the same spot again and again, I really don't know what that could be. So it is a UFO in that it's unidentified. I don't know.
It's about as bright as the Saturn that's rising in the morning now.
Yeah. Jupiter,
Venus.
And Venus.
Mars is up there too, but it's much dimmer.
Yeah.
It's about that bright, but it's a flash and it's gone.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Can't help you out on that one, Dave. Thanks a little for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too, by the way. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Facebook question from Samantha, who says, I live in the Ironwood Hurley area, and we've seen some northern lights from our backyard and near Lake Superior. What are the best conditions and times for seeing northern lights?
The best conditions are living where you live.
Yeah.
Because the further north you are, the more likely you are to see them. What northern lights are particles that have been spit out by the sun hitting the Earth's high upper atmosphere, interacting with our magnetic field. And atoms are split apart, and as they come back together, they glow. And the way that it works is it all sort of slips down towards the Earth in northern or southern regions. So that's what does it. And we can't really predict at least more than a couple of days in advance when conditions will be right for it. We are now watching the sun very carefully. But even when the sun does have one of these coronal mass ejections, they call it. It spits particles towards us. Even when that happens, it doesn't necessarily mean there will be northern lights, especially above a specific area. There may be northern lights, but they maybe would be to the east or west of us. Very difficult to predict. My brother-in-law is a professional photographer, and he goes chasing them, but he can leave for days and go very, very far north. So it's very difficult to predict.
There are some sites that will let you know if that condition exists on the sun.
Yes, and one of the best, I think, is spaceweather.com. Spaceweather is one word, .com. Every day it has a picture that it takes of the sun, showing you sunspots and things like that. And then it will have the predictions, just like a weather prediction. It'll say there's this percentage of a chance of it happening. But again, they can't predict exactly where it will happen, how strong it will be. They're making improvements. They're doing their best.
We have a Facebook question from Josh. You recently wondering if you've read about the star KIC 8462852. A popular science article suggests a possible megastructure around the star.
Yes, this is. I don't have the names of these various stars memorized, so that's a long number. But I do know that the Kepler mission, which went out to look for planets around other stars, has found a star where the star grows dimmer, and that's what it was designed to do. It will look at stars, and if they grow dimmer for a short period, especially if they do it again and again over a predictable time period, that's more than likely a planet passing in front of that star. Well, this star, it's very strange. The light won't go down by, say, 1%, which is what Jupiter would do to the sun when it went past the surface of the sun. It would dim its light by about 1%. No, this one is going down by many percentage points, and it's not doing it in a predictable way or a timed way. And there are people making speculations. Could there be an alien species that's building a structure to capture the light of the sun? But that's absolutely speculation. All we know is this is a very weird star that suddenly grows dimmer.
Really very, very cool. We had a caller who thinks the bright lights that the other earlier caller was talking about are iridium flares.
Iridium satellites, this is a decade old or more. Companies, they send up these satellites that are fairly low Earth orbit, and it was going to be for satellite phones. And they will catch the light of the sun. For a minute or so, they will grow brighter and brighter as they move across the sky, and then they'll dim. The problem with that is they don't stand still. The callers we've heard said this thing just stayed still, and iridium flares do not. So I don't, either they weren't seeing the movement, or they were seeing something I don't understand.
We have a few exciting sky events coming up in the next few months. There's a meteor shower, I know, coming up.
Yes, we are. We're kind of in the midst of... This is an interesting thing. Digital cameras, people aiming them up at the sky, they're now catching meteors more and more and more, and scientists are realizing, hey, there are more meteor showers, which are periodic rises in the level of meteors. There are more of them than we thought. They last longer than we thought. So now there are a couple that are lasting longer. There's one that's coming up, the Taurid meteor shower. We're actually in it right now, but it's going to get brighter and brighter. There will be more and more meteors. And there's someone who follows these things, who studies them, who's predicting that between Halloween this year and the 10th of November, there's a chance of more than a regular amount of fireballs, very, very bright meteors. And again, sort of like Northern Lights, this is very difficult to predict. He has had a good record, so on those nights, go outside, and of course you can't, again, predict. You can't say, okay, 3, 2, 1, meteor. That's not going to happen, but... and then in November, on November 17th every year, we have the Leonid meteor shower. And that can be...
That can be a dandy.
Every few decades. It can be amazing. People, when it's really pumping them out, we call those meteor storms, where you can see several meteors a minute. And that's pretty fun.
Pretty fun, and I probably mentioned this before, but I can remember several years back now, but being in northern Wisconsin on the edge of the Shawamigan National Forest, not a light anywhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was amazing watching that show.
And you have talked about that, and I wonder if it was the same night I was in the middle of Nebraska. Yes, just amazing, the number, the brightness, just one after another after another.
Paul Kinzer, our guest. If you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you if you have a question about what's going on in the sky. Facebook question from Joe. Joe said, would a meteor coming in directly at your location look like a flash of light?
It would. It would be pretty amazing for it to be coming straight at you and then to last so short a time that you would call it a flash. If it were coming actually straight at you, it would last a second or so, maybe. I mean, that could happen, but then again, when these callers said they saw it again and again and again in the same spot, I just don't see how you could see in the exact same spot one meteor after another. It's within the realm of possibility.
And another person commented, Jeremy commented, said, I catch stars out of the corner of my eye which aren't visible when I look directly at them.
Good observation. The human eye, our color vision is more in the center of our eye, and the colored cones, those little bits in our eye that see color, they can't see dim light as well as the rods, and the rods are spread out further out in our vision. They're in the middle too, but there's more of them further out. So they astronomers will say, if you're looking through a telescope and you can't quite catch something, they say use averted vision. Don't look directly at it. Look a little bit to the side, and yes, you'll see better.
Don in Minnesota has a question. Hi, Don. Thanks for calling.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Yep. When I was about 15 or so, we were out sitting on the car watching the stars, and there was, I mean, when I was younger, there wasn't so much light, and you could really see the stars.
Yes.
And I thought what I saw was a satellite, because I could see, you know, a light going across the sky, and except it did something a little peculiar. It took a right turn.
That it could not have been a satellite if it did that there.
That's what I figured.
Yeah, they're hurtling around the Earth at 17,000 miles per hour. They're not going to take a right turn.
Well, initially I thought it was a satellite.
Right.
Then the question arose, what could it have been?
Yeah.
I don't know. I recall myself seeing that when I was young.
Did you?
Yeah. And again, my brother and I were together, and we watched it for a while, and it would turn, and we thought, well, okay, that's a UFO. Again, a helicopter, something like that, they can take very sharp right turns, left turns. But we do see things. We don't know what they are. It doesn't mean nobody knows what they are, but they aren't going to tell us.
That's right. Oh, Don, thanks so much for calling. You know, we didn't get into holiday gifts, but of course your book, Stargazing Basics, you wouldn't say it, so I will, Stargazing Basics, the second edition, would certainly be a wonderful gift. And you mentioned another book. We should probably mention that again.
It's called
For Children.
The Stars, A New Way to See Them. I think it'd be a great book to read with a child if you wanted to learn more about the sky too. It tells, you know, what are constellations? Why does the sky change throughout the year? It will have drawings. He took the stars in them, made sort of dot-to-dot patterns to show us the various constellations up in the sky and tell the stories of those constellations, the mythology behind them, the best time of the year to see them. Very informative book. And I think books are a very good thing to get kids or adults who are interested in astronomy.
Absolutely. Just kind of maybe one final thing. The super blood moon, a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm not really a fan of the super moon and the blood moon. Those are sort of marketing things. But yes, it was a beautiful one. This was the fourth lunar eclipse in the last year and a half or so. And every few decades, we get those, several in a row. And this was the first one that was in the pretty early evening sky. I mean, it kind of started right after it got dark, and by 10:30 it was ending. Yeah. I was outside with my son and several classmates of his. Very, very beautiful, and this one was particularly dark. Called the supermoon because it's the closest full moon of the year, and I don't know why they're calling it a blood moon. It's I read somewhere somebody said if your blood was that color, you'd be in big trouble. But
yeah,
it was beautiful. I got some lovely pictures of it. And
we posted one. Thank you for sending one for us.
And if you see that picture online, a really neat thing that you can almost never see except during a lunar eclipse is stars right next to the full moon. The full moon is so bright that it will wash out the light of any stars near it. And most astronomers don't really like the full moon because when it's in the sky, astronomy isn't very good.
Isn't as good.
But this was very, very beautiful.
Yeah, it was. It's a wonderful photo, and that's of course up on our Facebook page, and we also have a link to Paul's book, which is Stargazing Basic: Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, and that's up as well. And I'm sure that you can get copies of that at Cambridge University Press.
Yeah, you can order from them. You can anywhere that
any bookstore is going to have is going to be
or
able to.
They'll have access to it. Yep.
We always have a lot of fun talking with Paul, and again, it's great to have him with us. And didn't even talk about your other business setting up a chance for people to see even in the daytime.
Yes, seeing stars is what I call it. And if you do a search for my name, Kinzer, KINZER, and Seeing Stars. I own a portable planetarium, and I travel to schools and libraries, and I share the night sky during the day.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And type Paul's name in. Or just go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I'm sure we've got a link to it. Paul, thanks so much. We'll look forward to your next visit.
All right. I love coming.
Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, second edition, Getting Started in Recreational astronomy. So always fun to have him with us, and he'll be back. We'll talk again about the skies. Tomorrow, how did it get to be Thursday today? And that means Friday tomorrow, and that means Garden Talk. And I think we're going to learn about harvesting and preserving your herbs. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Net.